right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night. We are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. The NBA playoffs are underway. Pacers game two tonight at 7 o'clock up in Toronto, as on the road, the 7-seed Pacers take the first game from the 2-seed Raptors, and I don't believe the Raptors have ever won a playoff series, won one playoff series.
One game.
It's a futile for this organization over the years, and the Pacers trying to continue that. But a monster game from Paul George the other night, a very nice night for Miles Turner coming into his own in his rookie season. And, you know, we've seen the Pacers be all over the map all year long. It's only one game in one playoff series, but doing it on the road against the number 2 seed, when, again, we're just not sure what we're going to get out of this Pacers team. Impressive way to start. Don't want to make too much out of it right now, but the best thing you could possibly do is win a game on the road.
Win. They liked the matchup before going into the game. You heard, I don't want to say trash talking, but the Pacers weren't enamored or scared of, and they shouldn't be. A lot of the guys on this team, a handful of them, especially the top players, Paul George, well, they were the number one seed just a couple of years ago. Yeah. So they've been there and done that, and not much should bother them. The only thing that's strange is we were kind of bagging on the Pacers, and at least I was on Wednesday, saying, hey, you know what? Yeah, you had a nice finish to the season, but you lost the game against Toronto's backups in Toronto on a game you needed to win. Well, Vogel still got Coach of the Month. They were 6-1 in April. They were playing decent things otherwise.
Is that really a month when it's only seven games?
That's what they put on the trophy, so whatever. I guess that's what you get. But the point was, again, you didn't get a lot of confidence after in a must-win game against Toronto's backups, thinking, well, this is going to be easy, and it wasn't easy. The Pacers didn't even didn't even lead in the first half, Dave. They didn't play very well. Paul George didn't play any well. They looked like they were getting a little out-toughed, a little out-physicaled. Luckily for the blue and the gold, Toronto's big-time players didn't play well in the first half. So they stuck around. They kept within arm's distance, which good teams do. Good teams aren't going to sulk when it's not going their way for their biggest player and then just pack it in for the night. At least they shouldn't. And the Pacers have had a little adversity being in the playoffs, again, with George and with Hill over the last couple years. Not last year, but the years before that. So it shouldn't be an unfamiliar territory. The poor Raptors now have lost 7 straight playoff games in a row, so there's a complete different angel and devil on the shoulders there. The Pacers are like, hey, this is okay. It's a 40-minute game. And Toronto, they're not even making free throws, and that's what they do. They feast at the line. DeRozan and and Lowry were all-stars, and those guys played like they had a turtleneck sweater on.
8-32 from the field.
And the crowd never got into it.
Free throws.
They were upset before the game started that it was a 12:30 game. You heard their coach, Dwayne Casey, come out and say, hey, man, we're the number 2 seed. We're good. We've got 56 wins. We should be playing in prime time. If that's your focus, probably have got other things to focus on. And
they've already heard about their futility. So, I mean, that can't be helping the mentality.
And the futility of that team, those guys were in those plays last year when they got swept by Paul Pierce. Now, Paul Pierce had some great shots in that series, let's be fair, but they didn't win a game, and they lost to the Nets having a 3-2 lead the year before that. They lost the last 2 games of that series because that's how I get to 7.
Yep.
They lost 2,
that's
then 4, no, then 1 with the
Pacers.
That's
how math works.
So is it 8 straight now or 7 straight? Whatever it is,
that's
it's
7.
Bad. It's bad for the Raptors, but obviously to get to 56 wins, Dave, they don't hand those out in the NBA. Those aren't free. You don't get. It's not like Monday night if you win on the road, you get bonus points or anything like that, or if you win 2 road games in a row.
And their team doesn't have a lot of playoff experience either.
They don't.
That's
they're
the nice
young
thing
in
that
general.
You mentioned earlier. I mean, the Pacers do have a lot of experience on that. And yes, they've got some younger guys on this team, but when you got your stars, the guys that play the bulk of the minutes, who've got a lot of playoff experience, that helps immensely, especially with a team who's kind of tightening up anyways.
And if Corey Joseph and Terrence Ross and some of these guys are your big, and Bismarck Biyombo are some of your big guys coming off the bench, well, those aren't going to bother the Pacers. The Pacers know they can score, but the veteran presence of Scola, sure, he starts. They're saying, hey, why is he playing so much? His Patterson should be in there, and Valanciunas should be in
15.
There. Right, and that's a great thing because if the Pacers do go small, if they do go big, there's some matchup problems across the board there. What the Pacers didn't do is they didn't panic. You didn't see a raffling of bad shots or anything else. When they were getting it put to them there in the second quarter when Toronto got up 8, whatever it was missed 3, it was missed, floater. You didn't feel the Pacers pressing to get back into that game. They were they were hanging around, throwing some punches, and they just a couple bad possessions here or there. Toronto tries to run out with it. Boom, they come right back at them, a 10-2 run to get that tied at 41. They go into half just down a couple or four or whatever it was. But in the second half, what happened? It wasn't hard to figure out. They got Paul George involved. Mm-hmm. They got Paul George good shots, and Paul George played like a guy that should be on the Olympic team that started all this. He played like an all-star.
And let's give Miles Turner a little bit of credit here because you're not going to call him a star of this game, but he certainly made an influence on this game.
He didn't run and hide.
He didn't run and hide.
He
played on both ends with just enough to give this team – look, Mahimi and Lavoy Allen started the game. They gave you 31 total minutes. So they went smaller. They went younger most of the rest of the game. Those guys weren't working out for him. Miles Turner, again, rookie year here. He's just turned 20. He's had the entire year, but only that entire year, and he doesn't have any playoff experience. But this is
not even a full year.
That was a really nice first effort.
Well, the reason you like Turner in this game is because when he got roughed up and he got shoved around and he got kind of abused there in the first couple of minutes,
he gave it back a bit.
Well, he didn't run and hide.
Yeah,
that was the whole point, and that kind of summed up the Pacers for me. No one strayed from the fight. No one said, "Oh, geez, it's not our night. Let's just start chucking some threes and try to get out of here and try to make this respectable." That didn't happen. And like you mentioned, Turner ended up with five blocks. He did have some foul issues. That's fine, but he's in there getting thrown to the deck, getting elbowed. I remember when his face committed that loose ball foul. That was great.
So,
The chin. Look at it.
You can't put that there.
You can't use your chin like
that's
that
illegal.
In the NBA. So, again, George was the catalyst, but again, you had George Hill doing what he had to do in the first half. Monte Ellis hit some shots as well. Solomon Hill gave you great minutes off the bench.
Yeah, see, there's another young kid without a lot of experience.
Hardly any experience with the Pacers, let alone in the NBA playing in general. And you found guys in a situation that wasn't too big for them. And the key to this, and we talk about this with college basketball, we talk about it with any big-time basketball game, when the main box office guy is doing his job, it makes everyone's life easier.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to give the Pacers credit because that first half, Paul George wasn't box office. He was a Tuesday afternoon matinee.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't because he was playing poorly. It wasn't going in for him. But what happens, those guys picked up their game, didn't try to do anything outside of the realm of what they normally do. And in the second half, when George started taking D. Roseanne to school, upside down, sideways, backwards, and forwards, guess what? Kick it in the corner. Boom, there's a three from Stuckey. Boom, dump it to Turner for a dunk. Guys were doing their roles. Guys were playing their roles. And that's why the Pacers were effective. And down the stretch, Toronto didn't look like they had too many answers for it. And that's full credit to the Pacers because we thought on Wednesday if there was one way the Pacers were going to win the series, it was going to be tough on defense. Not winning 120 to 115.
Yep.
And what they did is they shut down that backcourt. We'll talk more about that, obviously. And even in the front court, as you mentioned with Turner, good stuff there.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. We have Reds baseball coming up here right after the program. 7 o'clock, Colorado's in town. We'll have them again tomorrow night after Joe Smith Sports Talk, live from Yogi's at 6 o'clock. We'll have Candace Schroeder and Mary Campbell of IU Water Polo tomorrow night. And we'll continue the Reds, or pick them back up, rather, Thursday night. The Cubs come to town for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday thing, and we'll have it all here. 7 o'clock all three nights. But again, tonight, Colorado, 7 o'clock, right after the show, so don't go anywhere.
And we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to the Reds and Cubs for Thursday night a little bit later in the program, so stick around for that if you want to make a long weekend out of it or just get away for a quick night. And again, Reds and Cubs, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but we'll have the first three of those for you here on the airwaves.
Pacers 100-90 winners in Toronto for game one of their playoff series. They are the number 7 seed playing the number 2 seed Toronto Raptors. But this game is a Raptors team. Yeah, Raptors team without a lot of playoff experience, much of any, in fact. And the Pacers have got quite a bit and got some veterans. As you mentioned, game two coming up 7 o'clock tonight up in Toronto also. You can see it on the local Fox or NBA TV, whichever you want. Paul George, 33 points, 6 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks, 4 rebounds.
Bag of chips.
Sounds like the All-Star again, doesn't it?
It does, and it was most, again, how many did you have in the first half? 6 points, so do a little subtraction there and see how many minutes he played, chop him up, put him in the second half. But he did exactly what you needed him to do, and it was carry your basketball team. And you got a decent night out of Ellis and Hill. Again, role players doing what they need to do. Solomon and Hill gets to the free throw line 10 times.
Yeah, right.
10 times in 26 minutes. CJ Miles, again, grabbed just 7 boards, didn't have his best shooting night, did knock down a 3, though. But when you look at the Pacers, you have to have some balance. You get it. But what we talked about on Wednesday, why the Pacers could be dangerous, is because they have that go-to player at the end of games. They have a guy who's been around the block, who's put the ball in the basket, who started off, again, as a bit role player, grew into that role, and again, took that role by the scruff of the neck and made it his own. Again, they don't hand you these things. You have to go out and do it. And what George did was, well, he figured out no one could guard him one-on-one. Took him outside, took him inside, shaked him, baked him, you name it. And he destroyed everybody on Toronto's team that was trying to guard him. And there's not a lot of guys on that team that can, especially when you're trying to put DeRozan on him and then expect DeRozan to get you points late in the game.
Right.
It's a hard trade-off with 6 minutes to go if you're going to have a one-on-one battle if one's guarding one and vice versa.
I mean, Paul George is one of the few guys in the NBA for the last decade who could play both ends and give you
and guess where Paul George started
on both.
Well, he started on the defensive end, and that's why it's not uncomfortable for him in the offense. Like, you're going to guard that guy, 6'9", whatever he is? Mm-hmm. He can beat you so many different ways. And what was his field goal percentage in the second half? 10 of 12? It was something ridiculous. They didn't put him on the floor. They didn't knock him off on a screen. They didn't hammer him going to bat. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what an inexperienced playoff team does. Inexperienced winning team. Toronto's had games. It's 7 games 2 years ago, 4 games last year. That's better than not playing. This is not, yeah. They're not new to this. But the point
they won
is
a bunch of games last
year,
too.
They're new to winning. That's it. They played 4 games last year and got that was it. Done, right?
Yeah.
Got swept by in the 4-5 game. Yeah, they got swept by the Wizards, and they lost in the first round the year before that. So they're getting better in the regular season, 48, 49, 56. The regular season doesn't mean anything when you're in the playoffs. The playoffs come down to who executes in the final 4 to 5 to 6 minutes of the fourth quarter when winning time is on the plate. If you don't go out and get a 30-point lead, if you don't go out and get a 20-point lead.
Which we've seen
lead,
a few of in these first games.
Yesterday, 3 out of 4 games were all 100-point wins and leads on that. But what they didn't do is when Paul George was bad in the first half, bad in the sense
they
wasn't
didn't take
scoring,
advantage of it.
They didn't take advantage because their premium players didn't score. They were something like their starters. I think I saw the graphic at halftime were 8 of 27 in the half, and when they had 22 points and their bench had 23 points. So again, Toronto's bench helping out doing what they need, but again, not punching the Pacers when they're down on the mat and trying to knock them out. And from a team that has only won, they're now what, 1-7, 1-8 in opening round games? They've only won one series. You talked about they beat the Knicks in 2000, 2001. Nobody's on that team. Nobody's on that team is left around here. So they knew they had to get off to a good start. They knew they had to get moving. And he saw Frank Vogel, 14-11, bang, timeout. 16 or 18-12, where it was bang, timeout. He wasn't going to let the game get out of control or get out of hand. And the Pacers responded. Their bench helped out. They got big minutes from guys, especially when Mahimi got 2 quick fouls. Turner had to play.
Yeah,
you couldn't stick anybody else in there and hope. And Valanciunas had 19 rebounds with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. Nope. You know how many he finished with? 19 rebounds.
Exactly.
So foul trouble and problems like that. Again, he didn't make any plays down the stretch when Toronto needed guys to step up and make them. He got you to that point, but didn't get you over that hump.
333-2665 is a phone number. With any organization, you end up with good stories about player moves and bad stories about player moves. Up till recently, and maybe up till just on Saturday night, Solomon Hill would have been one of the bad moves. Draftee that really just hadn't done much. This year, he was averaging 15 minutes a game. Scoring 4 points a game.
How many games did he even play?
59.
Yeah,
but
bad.
He's listed his last 10 games here. It's 25 minutes a game, 9.5 points a game all of a sudden. So 5.5 rebounds. 13 big points for you the other night. You know, only two rebounds, but again, 10 for 10 for the free throw line, as you mentioned.
Massive.
Whatever the matchup was that he had, he took full advantage of that. And maybe it's only a one-series matchup. Who knows? But you get that kind of contribution from a guy you don't expect it from. It makes such a huge difference at this time.
It does. And the other point of that is just the support where – guys can focus on locking down Lowry. They can focus on locking down DeRozan. They don't have to worry about scoring and doing that. It's like, hey, there's Hill. Get him the ball. Look at him. He's making problems for the other team. Toronto, what do they love to do? They love to get to the foul line. They got the foul line 38 times. 38 times, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's player plus nine at the foul line against the Pacers. But only plus
14
five.
Rebounding, too. I mean,
there you go. There's a lot of things. If you just box scored this and looked at this, say, geez, how did that happen? But when the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game, Pacers had an 11-point lead.
Yeah.
They blew the game open in the last 6 minutes, 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. Why? Because the big players for Toronto couldn't score. Lowry, 3 of 13. DeRozan, 5 of 19. That's 8 of 32. That's terrible. That's 25%.
Exactly.
And the other part was they were 8 of 15 from the foul line.
Mm-hmm. So 1 not of 10
even,
on threes.
Not even the free ones that they had, and some of those were in the fourth quarter. They're missing the freebies.
Yeah.
It looked like they were under a little bit of pressure. It looked like the other thing the Pacers did extremely well by keeping an arm's length, they kept the crowd out of it. They gave a great stat on the game. No Canadian hockey team in the playoffs for the first time in 40-something years.
Really?
So these people got nothing else to do,
besides
jump on Drake and Toronto's bandwagon.
About the Raptors.
And they're worried about the Raptors. But there wasn't that one moment in the second half, because the Pacers came out right after halftime and boom, took the lead. They were up with, 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, and you never felt that it was going to be uncomfortable. I saw Lowry struggling at whether he should take threes or not take threes. DeRozan caught a couple in the corner wide open and two or three dribbled it, then shot a 22-foot fadeaway. It just didn't look like they were in rhythm. Maybe they were mad they were playing at 12:30. Maybe that got to them, and they said, you know what, this stinks. We shouldn't be doing this. And they just never got that spark going. They never got that spark they got from Valasunas in the first half. They never got that guy in the second half to give him any spark. The Pacers kind of got that spark from Turner you talked about, and then they get it from George. And they put him on his back. He's got spike marks from carrying everybody.
Yeah.
Said, hop
That's
on.
What he's there for.
That's what great players do. Pacers out-rebounded minus 11 on the offensive glass alone. That's an amazing stat. 13 turnovers to 19 turnovers or plus six there. That's going to help things out. So the defensive battle, you didn't have to worry about DeRozan getting 35 and Lowry getting 28 and wondering how you're going to slow him down in the fourth quarter. They never popped. They never got going. And no one else on this team, their leading scorer had 14 points.
Yeah.
14. So the Pacers' defense has to get credit in all this as well. And when they go small with Hill and Turner's the back guy there, Turner can guard everybody on the perimeter.
Yeah, Corey Joseph had 18.
He had 18? Yeah. Oh, at the very bottom there. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, he did.
But again, 25 out of Lowry and DeRozan. You're going up against those two guys. You take that every night.
That might be the first half.
They both average over 20 points.
That might be the first half.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that's the next step. Tonight you got game two. You know, it's not unusual to see a split early in these NBA series. You get all kinds of crazy stuff. So the question is, how do you keep up with defending and making them uncomfortable?
The thing with the Pacers, you're not asking them defensively to do anything that's new to them.
Right.
It's not a new, hey, now it's the playoffs. Now I really need you guys to focus and guard.
They've had this
attitude
for a while.
I need you guys to communicate better on screen and roll. I need you guys to figure all that out. That's not the issue with this team. The issue with this team is when it goes south offensively, who pulls them out of it? Is it that balance? Hey, keep moving the ball. Don't forget to move the ball. Get the next best shot. Or is it, hey, Monte Ellis, man, they do pay me a lot of money. Maybe it's time for me to get going, get hot, and start knocking them back. But when you stay in arm's length, and that's what you learn from game one. The Pacers weren't forced out of their comfort zone. They weren't at a spot, Dave, where they're down 13 in the second quarter, going, do we take his chance and put Mahimi back in with two? Do we start doing this? Do we start forcing tempo a little bit? Do we start cheating on the defensive end? No. That's what they need to do tonight. They're going to take some punches tonight. If Toronto's if Toronto's worth their 56 wins, they should come out and throw some haymakers tonight. And
those two kids should go off.
And Paul George can't have a 2-for-9 first half tonight. I don't think that's going to be conducive.
Not without somebody picking him up. I mean, what will be interesting to me here sometime soon is, as you mentioned, Monte Ellis, who's been just fine. This is a guy who averages 18 points in his career. He's averaging 14 right now. He hasn't needed to go off for this team, but there's been times where you say, you know what, if he went off for this team, then you might be talking about a lot higher seed for this team too.
I think the other interesting part will be how the Raptors, if they continue to attack Turner in the post. They did early, had some results. The big fella, JV, got in some foul problems. So that kind of limited everything that went. He got his fourth with 6:10 to go, 6:05 to go in the third, so he had to go sit. And he comes back in the fourth with 10 minutes and gets his fifth instantly. Yep. And three of his fouls, I think, were loose ball fouls. Three of his five. So, again, he's a guy that's not as quick a foot. Mm-hmm. He's going to be reaching, and Turner's quick.
Yep.
He's going to get to other places. So do they pound it in on him, trying to get Turner in some problems? But that'll just force the Pacers to go smaller. And, again, that makes an interesting, interesting matchup. And these should be good matchups. There should be, after game one, there should be a change in philosophy in how they attack each side.
That's the most interesting thing, honestly, about the NBA playoffs and why they're actually watchable compared to a lot of the regular season is that you do have.
Because it's a series.
You have in among the teams, just two teams facing each other. Just the vast differences in what you use with your personnel, what you try out, all those different things all over the place is so fascinating.
And I'll put a nickel that CJ Miles isn't going to go 2-for-7 again tonight. I'll put that on paper. So the Pacers, same thing. Don't have 100 turnovers. Don't get caught up in that speed game where you're just throwing the ball all over the place. Toronto wants to get out and move it as well. The Raptors, you let them get to the foul line, but you calmed it down. That was a good part. The Raptors in the bonus at 9:02 in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. They only shot 4 free throws the rest of the quarter. So Pacers can defend without fouling, and that makes their bench longer and stronger. And I think when the dust settles after tonight, two things are going to happen. Pacers are going to win the game because they look the better team, number one, in game number one. Or Toronto gets 58% from three.
Does something
57% crazy. From the field. Gets to the line 40 times and just has one of their 112-82 type games.
As you mentioned, I mean, 38-29 was the free throw edge. 52-38 was the rebounding edge.
Toronto
it's not as though
things.
They shouldn't have been there.
They couldn't score.
They couldn't score. Pacers 52% on threes, 4-19 for the Raptors. There's plenty that Toronto did that should have helped them through, and it didn't. So credit the toughness of the Pacers for making the plays.
I don't think that DeRozan and Lowry command. Maybe that's a bad word, but I think it's a good word. I don't think they command 5-player defensive attention like George might. Because George go anywhere on the floor and get
absolutely.
You. Lowry, he's not killing you off the dribble. Mm-hmm. He likes pulling up. He likes shooting jumpers. DeRozan, again, is not going to shoot the three. So if you know that. When he's sitting in the corner and he fakes two times and takes two dribbles, then shoots a 22-foot fadeaway, he don't want to shoot the three. Well, that takes one thing out. You don't have to guard on that, especially in screen and roll. Because if you know if he's going to turn the corner, he's not going to – and again, that doesn't mean he can't step back and hit 6-for-6 threes.
Yeah.
That can happen.
Well, that's how you get beat.
But that's how. Well, that's how what you have to adjust to. But I don't think those players have the cachet. Do they have the ability? Yes. They don't have the cachet that commands – all five Pacers.
Not until they prove they can do it.
They've got to shoot themselves out of it. And those numbers last night, a little bit different. It's 7 o'clock in Toronto. It's not the 12:30, so there's your prime time game. Should we point out it's Monday night, the worst watch TV night, to Dwayne Casey? Or
sure.
Will that get him upset as well?
And it's on NBA TV, not
in your sure. Bell network or
I guess if he TSN. Needs, if he needs to feel irritated,
he can't. You know he's going to be irritated.
Worked real well in the first game.
He loses 8 straight or 9 straight playoff games.
Right.
He'll be completely irritated. Let's give away a pair of tickets, shall we?
Sure.
Cubs and Reds this Thursday night. The Great American Ballpark, caller number 3-812-333-2665. This Thursday are the tickets. That's the only game we have for you. Compliments of the Cincinnati Reds, and don't forget Reds and Rockies tonight, 7 o'clock, following our broadcast.
So give us a call for some Reds tickets, and we got to take a quick break. Again, 333-2665 is that phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Again, reminder, we've got Reds baseball coming up here right after the show. Colorado in town tonight and tomorrow night, 7 o'clock both nights. Over the weekend, of course, little five weekend for those of us who live here. Nothing, I guess, too terribly crazy, although a couple races, but also the spring football game. Kevin Wilson's program, after their first bowl game in year five, has their spring practice, debuted a new quarterback with Nate Sudfeld graduating.
Lego, that's how we say it.
Lego?
Lego, L-A-Y-G-O.
All right, so he sounds like a children's toy, and he wears 21 as a quarterback.
That's from Jeff Keg, our buddy over there who's in charge of all the media relations with football.
We do want to get it right. So
we do.
He certainly looks like Nate Sudfeld. Will he play like Nate Sudfeld is, of course, the huge question mark right now, learning the offense, and I'm telling you what they do, so much on offense. That's a part people don't, I think, understand when they look at a football team, is just how much goes on before the snap, during the cadence, during the play, how much mentally goes on. So learning
it's not,
all
yeah,
that,
it's not it's 3 yards. Enormous. It's not 3 yards in a cloud of dust anymore.
It's not just that physical.
You can't line up and beat the guy in front of you. Well, you can, and you need to in certain situations, but that is no longer the it's easier to spread them out. Why? Yeah. Things happen quicker. It's harder to react when you have everybody trying to react at the same time. The offense should be in the ascension because they have the ball.
They know.
And they know where
and
it's
the
going.
Plan. Exactly.
The defense has to react. And you know what? That's why it hasn't been easy for Indiana's defense. But you know what? When you look at the numbers Indiana's offense puts up, let's look at some of the defenses they've played against have been top 15 in the country.
They certainly
that
put
they've
the pressure
racked
on.
Up upper 20s, 30s, sometimes even 40 points against. Mm-hmm. That just shows you the age of football that you're in. And before you call up and say, well, if you don't stop anybody, you never can win. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. You have to stop people in certain situations. That would help, no doubt about it. But you're not going to win very many games 63-56. Yes, I agree with that point 100%.
And I get that everybody points to the top of the mountain and wants to be Alabama, but I mean, let's just be smart and realistic about this for Indiana football and in the Big Ten in particular. What you're looking for is you're looking to win 8-9 games. That's what you're looking to do. That's the goal, should be the goal. I mean, 12 is always the goal, but you know, that's what you want the program to get to.
I don't have a problem with play 13.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just that's going to have to be your every year goals.
I think play 13 gets you one more rung up the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you play 13 again.
Get regular, sure.
And then you play 13 again, and all of a sudden you have critical mass.
No question.
And you have numbers, and you have competition.
No question.
And then maybe you don't have to.
My point being, you don't have to have a top 10 ranked defense because you're not trying to get into the national championship game right this minute. And I'm sorry if that's shooting low for people, but again, that's what we're talking about here.
Shooting reality.
I mean, who are you going to beat out? Michigan State, Ohio State, Purdue. Or not Purdue, but Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. Throw those guys in there.
That's your division.
Yeah,
that's
Wisconsin.
That's not your conference.
Iowa. Yeah.
The first four were your division.
Let's try to get any of those. I mean, so it's tough. The point there is you got to do what you can. And what you can do at Indiana is you can bring in offensive players.
Yes, you can.
You can bring in skill players because skill players always want the ball. You hear about this all the time in basketball in particular. How do you get all the guys the ball and all the guys their shots? You don't. Somebody's got to take, well, you know what? We've got an offense. We're happy to give everybody the ball. Come on in. We can have 8,000 of you. You can all get the ball.
It's just like
it's a
basketball.
Big party. Come on over.
We score 80 points. Divided by seven guys, do the math.
You're going to have some points.
You're going to have everybody's going to have to contribute for that. But the point back to the offense in the bowl climbing each season is you can have guys in place to take over the mantle instead of scrambling, perhaps. I don't want to say scrambling. That's maybe not fair. But you know Sudfeld's leaving.
Right.
The guys in your program might not be at the level you need them to be at your level, so you go looking at the JUCO ranks at the time. A team that's always pegging 8 or 9 wins, sometimes 10 or 11 wins, 8 or 9 wins, seems to have those pieces in place.
Oh, yeah, they got a junior ready to come in and start for
teams. And makes the transition easier.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. It's not to say that Richard Lego can't play, Danny Cameron can't play, Austin King can't play, Xander Diamont can't play, but there's a reason they're bringing these guys, and there's a reason they're auditioning for the job. And you hope it doesn't, because of the situation, rescind the amount of plays used, rescind the creativity on the offensive side, because as you mentioned, overloading isn't going to get you any better.
Right.
Laying a ton. Here's a book that's 3 inches thick. Please read that by the end of the week and
have it
run.
I'm memorized.
So that's the next step in building the program together, in my opinion. But the defensive side of the ball, Dave, there are players this season who have probably played more snaps as a group or a unit over the last year and a half, 2 years, than maybe we've seen in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years?
On the back end of this defense. I mean, the back seven, no question. Seven, okay. And again, this defense is changing a bit once again with the new coordinator. They're going to run a 4-2, which means five defensive backs, essentially. An outside linebacker is kind of a safety. I mean, a lot of people are running this normally anyways. You've got to have versatile guys out in space, and that's what it amounts to, is basically making more of a defensive back from the get-go.
It's two holding midfielders and a couple extra strikers.
Exactly. Look, the point is they didn't go out overnight and draft the Ohio State defense.
You can't do it.
So let's keep that in mind. To me, the scheme doesn't really matter all that much. What you need is you need veterans. You need guys who have been playing for a long time. You need balance at all the positions. And so if I'm looking at this defense right now, it still scares the hell out of me for this fall because of the imbalance on that defense, particularly up front. The best defense this team had in the last decade was about 4 or 5 years ago when we had Larry Black. We had Adam Replogle up front, Mike Metzger. It was a big, strong, playmaking defensive line. It took 3 years to get back to the point where it made some plays up front, and it was still one of the statistically worst defenses in the nation. But if you think about the defense last year, the best things you can say are Shaw, are Mangieri, our Latham, those guys are the best thing that was on that defense last year when it came down to it. You played a lot of young guys on the back seven. And a couple linebackers, you like the linebackers a bit.
Oliver, Scales.
But you don't come out of there saying these guys are you know, All-American type players. The defensive line last year was the only real improvement you had, and it was still statistically not very good. At some point that you grow into this balance on that defense. They're not going to be there, in my opinion, this fall. Now, maybe next fall, you bring in some young guys on the defensive line. But what still scares me about the defense is that up front, they're still going to be extremely, extremely young and lost all their playmakers up there.
But the good news is they're going to be real heavy at the linebacking core. That's
a lot
good
of
news.
Linebackers.
And a lot of guys. That
and versatile guys.
Yep.
I mean, versatile guys. Marcus Oliver will get out in space. No question
Scales
about it.
Scales can catch the ball,
Scales,
can cover.
No question.
Right. T.J. Simmons
Newton
has been a plugger.
Yep.
He's, you know what he's done? He plays just about every snap.
No, there's a lot to like there. And you know what? There's a lot to like with the youth in the defensive backfield, but it's still young. And a lot of those guys had injuries of some sort in the last couple years. So they're all coming off a little banged up too. So there's a lot of promise there once again, but it's still very young and not, to me, in the right mix and timing.
I think the promise comes from the they've been there and done that. They've played road football games. They've played conference football games.
Experience.
You're not
throwing some,
six true freshmen out there like you did last year. And if they have six true freshmen who can play this year, that tells me things are getting better or they're really bad.
Yeah.
Either the guys are playing because they're forcing themselves into the lineup or the guys are there. But I'm going to give them a break in the sense that at least last year you knew they were going to get torched in spots. Mm-hmm. You knew they were because they played 10 snaps the week before and then they had to play a full game.
Again,
it doesn't
six
matter.
True freshmen having to play in the defensive backfield is not a good thing.
You're never going to win that battle. But you can win the battle with some pressure. Now, Tom Allen's going to have to create some pressure. Mark Hagan, as you've heard on this radio station, talk about creative ways of creating pressure.
They did a lot of blitzing in the last 2 years. So, you know, whether you sit back because you don't want to expose yourself or whether you go hell's bells trying to go after the quarterback, they put up huge defensive numbers either way in the last 4 years. So to me, if you want to go pressure, I'm good with that. If you want to try to dictate, I'm good with that. You have to be able to accept the big plays, which is what you saw last year.
Absolutely.
Once again, a bunch of big plays. That's the question.
And you saw some guys in the secondary make some big plays. You saw Jameel Cook pick it and run it back for a touchdown. You saw, obviously, Rashard Fant make a bunch of deflections. What do they call those? Pass PBIs.
Breakups.
Right?
Yep.
Pass breakups.
Uh-huh.
Tony Fields gave you some. I just got the roster in front of me. I'm just throwing them out here because all these guys had to play at some point. So hopefully when they're in there this season and the call comes in to do this and shift this around pre-snap, they're not wondering, hey, who's got, you got, this got, what quarter you got, what part of the field am I playing?
Right.
Jonathan Crawford was a good player. You had guys that you can just start checking off here. And the Jamie Thompson kid. Now, he's going to be interesting because that's a position where you need a little help in the experience department. Now, I know it's at JUCO, but he came out as a highly rated junior college player. But, again, I'm with you on that. We've had enough junior college players that have come through here that have been highly rated that we're waiting. We're waiting. So don't jump into that with both feet.
They've used a lot of their JUCOs on the defensive side. Not many of them have worked out real great. So, you know, again, I'm going to hold off a little bit on that. But look, at the very least, they know that they have, while they have bodies, they don't come out with those bodies into the spring practice or even out of the spring practice saying, we know exactly which guys are going to play all these minutes.
Well,
you got a lot of choices.
Dutra was banged up too.
But I mean, you got a lot of choices because you got a lot of experienced guys, but that doesn't mean you've got a lot of all pro, all conference type guys.
You know? Hope, though, with that experience and with that level of involvement last year, practices ratchet up, competition ratches it up, watching film, it has to, and that's got to be part of it, because as you mentioned, if you're not going to put pressure on the quarterback maybe to the degree you'd like because you don't have the attacking three or four in that front line defensive line, well then corners are going to have to hang on. Safeties are going to have to make right reads. Mm-hmm. You're going to be back there a little bit longer, sadly, or you get creative with your blitzing and you're left on the island. There's multiple ways to do it, and again, this Indiana defense is going to have to, for the third time in 5 years, show you, because it's a new coordinator, it's new stuff, it's new terms, it's new everything else, but if it's 600 yards of total offense, you can call it anything you want.
Hey, I'm just trying to set the expectations here. If you think they're suddenly going to be phenomenal, to me, defensive line is where it starts. You're young there, and you're still very young in the back. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. We certainly don't mean it to be doom and gloom for Indiana. Far from it. I just don't want to set expectations for IU football that yet another defensive coordinator change is going to make all the difference in the world. You can talk about the great tackling. All of a sudden in practice, you're tackling your own guys. You can talk about the great attitude, and we've got this wonderful attitude about takeaways instead of turnovers.
Let's do it.
I don't care what you call it. Go get the ball. if it's a mental thing, great. Hey man, go. Do it. Whatever. That works. I'm good with that. I'll give that a try. Sure. You know, the attitude that you want to be more positive about it, that's fine too. I don't think, you know, other people aren't positive. I think some people might be realists at some point in time. Is that the way to go? I don't know.
But when it comes down to it, isn't that pile that is called coaching, doesn't all that factor into
there's so many different ways of doing it.
That's my point. So they're trying something new again because the other ways haven't worked.
I mean, Phil Jackson won 10 championships. He's sitting around doing meditation and probably smoking joints with his players. I don't know.
That's absolutely probably
he's one of the winningest of all times. So you can do a lot of different ways.
The point is
when you have the stats that you have and they're not even close to good, then you got to change some things. We all get that. So try something different.
And
I'm just saying the defense is going to need to see, as you were looking at in the break there, you're going to need to see more SRs and JRs across the entire roster on that defensive side and guys with letters and a lot of experience before you start talking about the defense being middle of the pack nationally versus bottom of the pack nationally.
Yep, and the more you give up, the more pressure that puts on that offense, the more pressure that puts on that offensive line and the new quarterback, and that's the other thing. Nate Sudfeld, remember, started last year, but he only had, 12 or 13 games under his belt, and we thought, geez, he's not even really that experienced guy you want to talk about. Now you're talking about guys that have zero starts besides Diamant coming back and his cleanup of his surgery. He won't be back until summer workouts, which is fine. That's not a big deal.
Right.
But the cupboard is bare in that sense. But I think when you have options, I don't think Indiana is pigeonholed into running one certain way, playing one certain way. You have guys that have shown at least flashes where you can take a chance. The offensive scheme works. It's what is the new defensive scheme going to be? Is it blitz all? You're not going to have tendencies that jump out at you and do all that. But what is going to be tangibly different about this defense besides holding people under 30 points a game? Besides holding people under 500 points a game, where you see, oh, I see a difference. Is it going to be, quote, flying to the football? Is it going to be turnovers? Turnovers are great. You know, who doesn't want turnovers? I agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm. Can guys take the next step? That's the interesting part to me because of the linebacking crew that's had some experience. Some guys up front have had some experience. The guys in the back have had some experience. Can they get to the hump and get over it and develop into that next level of player? Because that's kind of what Indiana's theme has been over the last 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. We can't get the five-star guy. Right. We'd love to have some four-stars. But if we get a hand on some threes and twos and coach them up for a couple years, and they've played 40 games, well, they would get in a year, 12 games now. They've played 36 games. It's time to start not having to check with me and not having to worry about what position you're in during film session and not worry about this guy or that guy. It should be second nature to some of these players by now. That's, I think, where the hope comes from because of that experience.
And the first time in 3 years maybe here, we don't go into a season where the Indiana offense is talking about a surefire type pro prospect in its backfield. You know, it was Tevin Coleman for 2 years, wowed everybody for those 2 years in particular that he was the only guy. Stephen Houston was a nice player, got some time in a camp. You had Jordan Howard last year. Nate Sudfeld, of course, back there. And
Simi Cobbs might fit that bill, Dave.
He could. He's got a ways to go.
I'm talking skill players.
Okay. So I'm talking about guys that can wow you with what they can do with
Simi
the ball
Cobbs
in their hands.
Simi Cobbs has been close.
Simi Cobbs has got some talent. There's some young, talented kids, but there's nobody that jumps off the page to you. You don't go in this and saying, okay, we're going to have three different skill players on the All Big Ten teams in the preseason.
Cody Latimer was in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, we've had one of these guys, and we've had two of them really the last couple years here in this program. So that's an interesting part for the offense. The offense under Kevin Wilson has always generated offense, so I don't think you have to worry about them scoring any points. They will score some 2,000 points.
2,000-yard rushers last year.
Yeah, I mean, they will score points of some kind somehow. I'm not worried about that. How easy is that going to be for them to do that? Certainly helps to have a lot of that offensive line coming back. And as you mentioned, Dan Feeney in the middle to just road grade people, that's a big help. But it'll be very interesting to see how the skill players develop, because the last 2 years, the wide receivers in particular have been very disappointing. The running backs have been great. Nate Sudfeld has been very, very good to great, no question. So how do all these young guys now step up? The wide receivers suddenly are your most developed position all of a sudden.
And Mitchell Page brings back some experience.
Simi Cobbs has got size and talent, no question.
You've got some interesting guys at running back.
You get Harris back at wide receiver, be nice.
Another slot player. Yep. You've got Ricky Jones. Just stay healthy, man.
Yeah.
Just stay healthy.
A lot to choose from, and they always generate
Isaac
offense.
James took a year off last year. He made some plays. Again, in high school, but you've got guys that you hope can, again, be coached up, and the offense has shown it works. Mm-hmm. Can you get 1,000 yards out of Divine Redding? I wouldn't say why not.
Yeah.
There's been too much proof to tell me otherwise.
Yep.
And that's a good problem to have.
Folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday to talk to you about game two of the Pacers at that point in time. Don't go anywhere. We got Reds baseball coming up here at 7 o'clock. Colorado's in town, and we will talk to you Wednesday. You've been in the zone.